Attention, listeners. Do you ever find yourself struggling to decide what to watch on a Saturday night when you're in the mood for horror? Or perhaps you're trying to round out your own horror film education. In either case, I'm sure you'll be able to make some great discoveries in my 10x10 horror watch list, featuring a breakdown of the 10 favorite horror movies from 10 renowned horror directors. We did a deep dive of the favorite horror movies from directors including Guillermo del Toro, Ari Aster, Jordan Peele, Quentin Tarantino, James Gunn, Rob Zombie, Martin Scorsese, and many, many more. Here you'll find a collection of each director's favorite horror movies, along with quotes about what they appreciated about the films, all in an easy-to-reference PDF that you can download absolutely free. Featuring a mix of well-worn classics and deep cuts, hopefully you'll discover some overlooked gems and look at old classics through new lenses. Download the 10x10 horror watch list for free by visiting nicktaylor.com/horror guide. That's nicktaylor.com/horror guide. Welcome to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. As always, each episode of the Nick Taylor Horror Show explores how today's horror filmmakers are getting their movies made, while deconstructing their methods and career strategies into practical insights that you can use on your own horror filmmaking journey. Today we welcome Josh Forbes to the podcast, director of Destroy All Neighbors. This is a gleefully fun movie that feels as inventive as it is unhinged. It's the kind of movie that I'm feeling really good about seeing more of because it's completely original. This is Josh's second feature after his debut, Contracted Phase 2, and I think he's really made a serious statement. The energy, attitude, fun, and bonkers practical effects make this a really enjoyable experience. The movie starred Jonah Ray with a very hilarious performance by Alex Winter and special effects by Bill Corso and Gabe Bartolos. In this interview, Josh gets into the making of Destroy All Neighbors, from the conception of the initial idea to his attachment as director, raising funds, and more, as well as the current state of cinema that enabled something this original getting made. Don't forget to check out Destroy All Neighbors, now streaming on Shudder. And in the meantime, please enjoy this conversation with director Josh Forbes. Josh Forbes in the house. How are you?
Hey, good. Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Doing really good. Destroy All Neighbors is the kind of movie that I am comforted by knowing is getting made these days. I feel like in this age of all of this just regurgitated IP, something that's so singular that clearly feels like it was plucked directly from your brain. I feel like we're in an interesting phase. I said, I don't know if you've seen Onyx the Fortuitous. Similarly,
Oh, yeah.
Just this individuality of vision, Fried Berry a couple of years ago. And I feel like you're almost bringing back that Hennenlotter, Usna, Stuart Gordon vibe. Mm-hmm. Overall, just enjoyed the hell out of this. And it's really refreshing to see something so original that clearly is very much seemingly your original vision.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's funny because it is in so many ways. I took all the things that I love and put it in a blender. As well as this thing that Alex and Jonah and all the writers. It's very much a jambalaya or a smoothie or a smooth jambalaya. I don't know. No, it's funny because it is a lot of like older stuff that I am drawn to. But I like hearing that it felt fresh and new to you because, it was very much an experiment. I'm like, all right, I hope this works. Like this old movie is like cracking me up and has everything I love. Like, I hope.
Yeah.
I hope it finds audience.
Can you talk about the process of getting it off the ground? I feel like this is not something that fits into any template. So what was it like pitching it, getting it made, finding the right producers? Yeah.
So the initial idea came between myself and Charlie Piper, the first writer on the movie. I was bitching about a crazy neighbor I had. He was complaining about one that he had. And I was just telling him how I was just obsessing. I would just lay at night and just envision different ways of killing my neighbor. And so instead of acting on my darker impulses, I decided, oh, what if we did Telltale Heart, but meets Barton Fink, meets whatever knucklehead aesthetic we both share.
Yeah.
And so it took off from there. And so that was phase one or phase zero. And but at a certain point, Charlie cranked that script, and we kept going back and forth, getting it as perfected as possible. And at that point, so I do a ton of music videos and commercials. And part of that process is doing like a treatment, what they call a treatment, which in movies, a treatment is more of an outline, but in a commercial, like a treatment is like a 20-page PDF
yep.
with imagery, or like a lookbook, I guess, is also something people talk about. And then also, in addition to that, I did a sizzle where I pulled all these movies that I love and I tried to tell the story through these different clips, which is I found it useful. I've heard people critique it saying, hey, you have all these $100 million movies or whatever. There's no way your movie is going to be Evil Dead and Brain Damage and whatever, Werewolf in London. Yeah. So I get that. But to me, like, even just making that really bolstered my feelings about, I was like, okay, my instincts are correct. I think that this movie is going to work. I think we can have this sort of romp, but also with a horror feel. It's funny. I had not seen Idle Hands, though. I just watched it recently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was aware that it existed and I had a sense of what the tone was, but I intentionally didn't watch it.
Yeah.
A lot of things that I end up not watching because I'm afraid that they'll be doing something that I would have wanted to do. Just means I rob myself of a lot of entertainment.
Right.
It took me forever to get to What We Do in the Shadows because I was like, no, I want to make that.
Oh, you know, the movie or the show?
I'd seen the movie a long time ago, but the show I was just so resistant to watch because I was like, this is what I want to do. And yeah. I was afraid to watch it and then feel, oh, there's like all these jokes that I can't make or whatever. But it was silly because I've been diving in recently and it's like, this is the greatest thing ever.
yeah, it's pretty amazing.
But yeah, so at a certain point, what happened? You know, I mean, I have a handful of various like contacts in the industry, massive air quotes. And it's funny, I had sent it out to various people and to varying degrees of research. A lot of people were like, oh, this is awesome, but I don't know how you're ever going to get this movie made. And what's funny is some of the people who I sent it to, who turned it down, have since kind of been like me too'd or Ooh. Have been embroiled in their own controversy. Okay. So I'm like, okay.
That worked out.
Like bullet dodged. And so eventually we had two producers. Eventually we got it to Jonah Ray. I think that was the big piece. We had a list of people that we thought were good for it. And it's funny because so much of the character is based off of Charlie, our writer, who's like a smaller guy. I'm a giant, so everybody's small compared to me. And so I always envision small William and large Vlad. Vlad's our monster in the movie.
Or is he?
But then as we're going through the list and seeing, we got to Jonah, it was like, oh gosh, this guy's so perfect, but he's 7 feet tall. He's super tall. So we ended up having a short Vlad, which is awesome. So that was a big thing, was getting it to Jonah. My friendship with him is like hard to figure out where the beginning was. Mm-hmm. I think it's just through the comedy world. I think I saw him at a grocery store and I was like, hey, I love your podcast.
Oh, nice.
And then I would just come to his comedy shows and talk to him and we eventually became pals and stuff. But I knew that from listening to his podcast that he had a real heart for horror. And I would see him at screenings for movies and stuff. And, oh, this guy is really into it. So we had been working with a couple of Jonah's friends as producers. And again, we hit a dead end. I got it to my buddy Russell, Dan Geary, who's a producer who produces a lot of stuff for my friend Johnny Look. And anyway, so brought it to him. And again, it's like we tried handing it to whoever would listen. And again, no traction. And then during that time, my friend Mike Benner came on and he did a redraft of the movie. Mike Benner's, he works on Bob's Burgers that he did.
Oh, nice.
And Charlie, as much as I adore Charlie, but he very much feels like he was like born in the 1800s or something like, or the 1920s. I don't know. Everything about him is very precious and clocked. Or, yeah. I don't know. There's just something like delightful about him. And so, but having Mike Benner come on, brought it into the future was a bit more... felt more like an indie comedy. I feel like the movie that I made with Charlie was just like was really weird and funny and quirky. And Benner brought it into the 21st century. And because we had Jonah, Mike had the great idea of bringing the music aspect in. Because initially his character was a cartoonist, but it's, hey, Jonah plays music. What if he was a musician in there?
Yeah.
And one big tip I have for everyone, for any budding filmmaker out there, is just like, what do you have around you? Awesome.
Who do you know that owns a pig?
Yeah. Who do you know that can do a backflip or whatever? You know what I mean? So many of my music videos are just based off of that. Who's a good drawer and a good animator? Hey, will you do this for free? Oh, you make cool cool stuffed animals. Could you make a costume that looks like one of your stuffed animals? Whatever. And so we worked that into the script. And then the pandemic hit and we were just like, what do we do? And Jonah had an office right across the alleyway from Alex. And we would just, as we're working on the script, and we would just fantasize about, man, you know who would really get this movie is Alex Winter. Maybe he could be a producer on it, or maybe he could, whatever, sprinkle some magic freak dust on it.
Yeah.
And so he sent it to him, and Alex was like, I'll take a look, but if I don't like it, I'll tell you that I came down with a case of scurvy. That's what he said.
It's straightforward.
Yeah. And we were like, okay. And then we got an email a few days later, and he was like, the good news is, I don't have scurvy.
Nice.
So from there, Alex has his awesome folks at CAA, and they sent it around a lot of places, and there were no bites. And then Joe Lynch, director of Suitable Flesh coming out soon, and Mayhem and Everly. Anyway, so Joe is a friend of Jonah's, and he put in a good word with the folks at Shudder, and we had a call. We had a meeting with them. And of course, on the call, they were like, let's just get our checkbooks out right now. This is a home run. And we're like, okay, great. And then I think it took at least a year or more from the let's get a checkbook out to actually shooting. But in that process, we brought in another writer, Jared Logan, who's just like an amazing comedy writer. And he's just like a big D&D nerd. And so I knew that we were in good hands with him. And we just kept workshopping and honing the script over and over. And we're so blessed to have the two leads that was a part of it too, is I was like, hey, if you guys want to be in this, if you guys want to be producers on this, like that would be amazing. And I think that was just such a shrewd move on my part. It's just because if I knew that they would give 100% or, you know, whatever, 3,000%, and I knew that they would care, and they did. And it was amazing. And so then from that, it's like everybody, all of our favors got pulled in. It's Jonah's buddies with Kumail, and somehow by an act of God, he shows up in our movie. And
yeah.
Thomas Lennon and we're all friends with Ryan Katner from the band Man, and he came on to do the music, and then he wanted to play one of the characters. And so it's like, all right, let's
off
go.
To races.
Yeah. So yeah, that was basically the gist of it. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about the budget, but I think it was around $2 million is what we had. We did it union, guys, and which costs a lot more money. And we did it in LA, which costs more money. What's nice about doing it in LA is that not only do we have a soft bed to sleep in, but when you're pulling in these cameos or people coming in for bit parts, day players, like they live here, so they can show up. We were talking about various times about, like, oh, let's go film it here or there or Canada or whatever. And it's for those different parts, like we would just be getting local people. Mm-hmm. Whereas for this, it's like we were able to get all our friends in the movie, which is awesome.
Yeah. The practical effects were awesome. And they not only were really high quality, but they also really felt reminiscent of a lot of the effects that we loved from Beekler and Steve Johnson and like a lot of old 80s stuff, but that also looked really new and fresh at the same time, like really high quality. So did your effects and what was the overall approach to the effects? Because clearly practical effects were a big ambition with this movie.
Yeah. And even from day one, I don't know why, but I always wanted Vlad to be a prosthetics character. For whatever reason, this guy has this neighbor who just, he views as a monster. It'd be really cool if there was just something uncanny about it. Maybe he looked like Marv from Sin City or something like that. Just that Marv and Benicio del Toro in Sin City both had this weird, uncanny, like, I don't know what's wrong with your face, but I don't like it. So that was always a part of it, too. And again, going back to the look around and see what you have, Charlie was buddies with Gabe Bartolos, and he had worked for Gabe. And Gabe is the mastermind behind, he worked on the Basket Case, like Basket Case 2 and 3, like all of those crazy characters. That was all him. He worked on the Cremaster movies, the Matthew Barney, really high art, bizarro thing. He had worked on, I think he did the sculpt for Leprechaun.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, he just has this pedigree and is just awesome. So that was always in the back of my of our mind when we were writing it. I have a list of effects people that I like and that I've worked with. But it was like, if we could get Gabe on board, and man, he killed it. He knocked it out of the park, and he was a great collaborator. And then, which we could talk about that process, but I also want to give a shout out to Bill Corso.
Oh, wow.
Who, yeah, he did all the makeup and the applying. So
him like and Gabe Alex designed it together.
Yeah. And so he's known Alex forever. Like they worked on Freak back in the day and Bill and Ted and all that stuff. But he's not shy about mentioning the other movies he's been working on. He's like, oh, yeah. I was just on this movie called Indiana Jones. I don't know if you've heard of it. Yeah, that's amazing. Because he did all the Harrison Ford. They have like a stunt guy, but they like did prosthetics to make him look like Harrison Ford.
Oh, right.
Stuff like that. He's a genius. He's just amazing. And yeah, we were able to reach into our Rolodex, to use a very antiquated term, and find these people who are just so insane. But part of it too is that they don't make movies like this anymore, yeah, or so much anymore, but you still have these amazing artists. That was a big part of it. Man, these guys, they're still out there. They're still doing stuff, but it's, you know, we know Gabe worked on one of the Zack Snyder, oh, the zombie one in the Vegas or whatever.
Oh,
he did like a zombie horse or whatever. That is awesome in the movie, but it's, come on, I want to see Gabe. I want to see a full Gabe thing. So working with him too, was like, that really helped inform the script. It's okay, we have X amount of dollars that we can give you. Here's the story. We got this, we have this guy, and I don't want to give too much away, but it's in the trailer. Alex's head is going to get cut off. How do we do that? We have this body and this torso, and what do we do with those? And we had these other neighbors that get this destroyed. And he just had such great ideas. One of the big things he talked about was like the silhouette of the character. Can we design various characters that even if you just saw a silhouette, you'd know who it is and you'd get a feeling of what that character is all about. And so that was hugely important to us too. Okay, we want to have variety in the people and the neighbors and even visual variety. And I feel like we pulled it off. I'm very pleased with it.
Yeah. Now this was so much fun. And I know we're getting short on time, but I feel remiss if I didn't mention prog rock, and the prog rock plays a huge role in this movie. Any favorite prog rock albums of note that listeners who may be uninitiated should start with?
I was already into prog, I guess, as a youth, which is a weird thing. My grandfather's brother had died in Vietnam, and I inherited this whole crate of his records. It was just tons of Frank Zappa, which I don't even know. He would call it pro. I don't even know what he would, which ties in with Alex because he did the Zappa documentary. But like the one that was like super impressionable for me was the King Crimson in the Court of the Crimson King or whatever. There's like the one that just has this crazy face that's all fleshy. And that was what I would just stare at all the time and just listen to constantly. Mm. But in making it gave me an excuse to just listen to all sorts of stuff. Like Gentle Giant's Octopus album is amazing. There's this band called Straubs that I found out about. Straubs, like Straubs. But they're just so beautiful. And one of the big ones for me too is, I don't know if you see the trailer for Buffalo 66, but he uses a song by Yes, the band Yes. And I just remember seeing that trailer being like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen or heard in my life.
Wow.
But it's because the song, it just keeps going all over the place. Sure. It very much lights up my ADHD pinball machine in my brain. Nice. You know?
I feel like you've given us a lot to start with. Cool. Josh, this was a whole lot of fun. Huge congrats on the movie. It was a real blast. Again, really glad to see more movies like this coming out and hoping for a sequel or at least something that takes place in this universe.
Yeah. Destroy All Neighborhoods. That's the next one.
This was great, man. Thank you again.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
All right. Here, as always, are some key takeaways from this conversation with Josh Forbes. Number one, take inventory of awesome things you have access to. So this is a very common takeaway. I have noted this one a few times, but it bears repeating. Take inventory of everything you have access to and fashion your movie out of that. Production value is critical and often so expensive. So it's important to maximize your movie by taking an inventory of what you have access to and writing your script around it. If you have a friend with a boat, that boat should be in your movie. A friend who owns a pig, in the case of Josh, a pig should be in the movie. This is exactly what Robert Rodriguez did with El Mariachi and Kevin Smith did with Clerks. Number two, use practical effects. Practical effects never really went away, but still somehow feel like they're having a new heyday, which is awesome. The thing about practical effects is that the community is very, very passionate, and despite having a relatively low budget, Josh was able to get some very heavy hitters on board, like Bill Corso and Gabe Bartolos, simply because the project looked fun. Similarly, when he did Mortuary Collection, Ryan Spindell was able to get Tom Woodruff Jr. and Alec Gillis from ADI on board, despite having a relatively low budget, because these guys wanted to be involved for the fun of it. The level of passion present in the practical effects community is something very awesome to tap into, and it adds a level of production value to your movie that goes a long way in the horror community. Of course, always pay as much as you can. Number three, push for your original singular vision. Destroy All Neighbors could not have been made by anybody else but Josh because it is so specific and singular to him, his sensibility, and the things that he likes. Directors are supposed to direct movies that only they would be able to do. As a director, you need to understand and own and articulate your own sensibility. Yes, of course, be open to feedback and collaboration, but your movies should feel specifically, uniquely yours. These are the types of projects that inspire others and are worth getting very excited about. Anyway, guys, thank you as always for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, why not share it with your friends and family on social media? Don't forget to follow the show at my new Instagram and TikTok channels, at Nick Taylor Horror Show. That's at Nick Taylor Horror Show. Thanks again for listening to the Nick Taylor Horror Show. We scare because we care.